Bitcoin ETFs will always be around just like gold ETFs are, but it's, you only get this sort of like shining, like welcome to ETFs moment once where you break through. You know, it's like an artist who has a first album that's a smash hit. You can definitely live on after that, but you only have that moment once. And we're in that moment. People should appreciate it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Unchained, your no-hype resource for all things crypto. I'm your host, Laura Shin, author of The Cryptopians. I started covering crypto 8 years ago, and as a senior editor at Forbes, was the first mainstream media reporter to cover cryptocurrency full-time. This is the March 8th, 2024 episode of Unchained. Uniswap makes it easier and safer than ever to access DeFi seamlessly across desktop and mobile. No more clunky experiences, just clean, simple, and smart. Visit smarter.uniswap.org to learn more. With iTrust Capital, you can buy and sell crypto in a tax-advantaged retirement account. Enjoy significant tax advantages, 24/7 access, and the industry's lowest fees. Polkadot is the original and leading Layer 0 blockchain with over 2,000-plus developers. And the Polkadot 2.0 upgrade will be a massive accelerator for the ecosystem. Join the community at polkadot.network/ecosystem/community. Hey, Unchained listeners. As you know, it's hard keeping up with the fast-paced world of crypto, so we've got just the thing for you. Subscribe to our free Unchained daily newsletter at unchainedcrypto.substack.com. You'll get the latest crypto news and original articles from our reporters, as well as summaries of other happenings and bullet points, plus our meme of the day, all curated and written by our amazing team. It's still your no-hype resource for all things crypto, just in newsletter form. Sign up at unchainedcrypto.substack.com. Again, the URL is unchainedcrypto.substack.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Today's guest is Eric Balchunas, senior ETF analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence. Welcome, Eric.
Great to be here. How are you?
Good. It's an exciting week for Bitcoin. Monday will mark 2 months since the start of trading for the spot Bitcoin ETFs. And at the time of that launch, Bitcoin was trading at about 47,000 and it's now around 67,000. What do you think of the spot Bitcoin ETF performance during that time? And how did it compare to your expectations?
I thought it would take longer to have this sort of second wind. The second wind came faster and was more intense than I thought. I think we all expected some hype early, like the first couple of days. It was like a pressure valve that was built up for 11 years and it finally released. Of course, there was going to be hoopla and some flows and some volume, and there was. And then it kind of dipped down and I thought, okay, we're going to get to this new normal of like maybe 50 to 75 million a day in flows, you know, and maybe an outflow here and there, a little more normal. And GBTC's outflows had actually stabilized. So I thought, okay, we're going to enter this sort of more mild area. And then potentially down the road, as advisors get more interested, there could be a run-up. Well, that happened like in like 2 weeks after I thought that. There was this clear second wave that came in. And not totally clear what caused it. I think it looked like iBit in particular really was able to get volume. And I don't know if BlackRock's wholesalers were out doing their thing. It looks like they got a lot of asset managers to buy in. Retail has been very present in the ETFs. And so you saw a big run-up in flows and volume, especially volume, in the past 2 weeks. And that's obviously caused an upward spiral. The flows come in, they have a nice impact on price, and they have a sentimental impact. I call it the ETF effect. If you know these flows are coming and you're not an ETF investor, you're probably going to go, well, this is probably bullish, I'll buy. So it's not just the ETFs lifting the price. There's an effect around it that's positive. And so I think that's what we're seeing. And so I've been in ETFs for about 20 years, and I call this the big come up. There's just certain times where something has its moment where it just rises quickly. Sometimes it's almost like a mania. ARK was probably the last one, where the flows come fast and furious, the volume hits, And basically you get some FOMO, and that actually helps the price of this, of the underlying, go up too. And I think we're in that moment. I think it only happens once. After there's a long decline or a bear market, it's tough to have that feeling again. Bitcoin ETFs will always be around, just like gold ETFs are, but it's, you only get this sort of like shining, like welcome to ETFs moment once, where you break through. You know, it's like an artist who has a first album that's a smash hit. You can definitely live on after that, but you only have that moment once. And we're in that moment. People should appreciate it. As an analyst, I love watching it. I think it's, you know, fascinating. I was glued to ARK Mania when that happened. The Jets ETF was a little like that as well. And these ETFs don't make up a ton of the market share of the ETF pie, but they're so fascinating because they're punching way above their weight. You know, Vanguard goes along. I wrote a book about Vanguard because they are just so big. But, you know, what else can you say, right? They take in a ton of money every day. They plot along. It's like the blob. And they take in the core of the portfolio. So these big companies, we know what they do. It's like old news. But when somebody comes from the outside and is able to go wild from like this far off area and sort of command the attention and a lot more flows than they're due, it's hard to take your eyes off of it. So I thought that I would be on to other things by now, because I thought this was going to settle down and Bitcoin would be 10% of my life. But the second wind has me almost as engaged as during the approval, because again, just as the way I was engaged in other times, something broke through from the outside like this has.
And so when you kind of compare that to other moments when, you know, you said that there have been a few other ETFs that had similar manias, but when you look at the Bitcoin one, like, is there anything that you would say is sort of particular to it or different about it?
Well, the big difference is it's all happening in funds that aren't even 2 months old. That's crazy. That's unprecedented. Like ARK was around for 4 years, and it invested in these sort of high growth, sort of future-y kind of companies. And that just happened to be in vogue, especially around the COVID lockdown. Those companies were like, because everything was like digital, right? For a while, we thought Zoom was going to, you know. So these companies took over and ARK went. So ARK's moment happened 4 years, and other funds happen on a smaller scales, usually years and years after they launch. And so that's why one of my phrases to issuers is hang in there, because you never know when the stars are going to align on your area. What makes this unique is that it happened right off the bat. You know, the only possible precedent is gold, but gold ETFs, it took them 3 years basically to get where we are now with the Bitcoin ETFs in 7 weeks. It's something like that. It's ballpark 3 to 7 weeks. And that is wild. And even if you take out GBTC's outflows, that number is accurate, by the way. If you add in GBTC, you get to $53 billion in assets. That, I think gold probably took 5-6 years to get there. So in fact, the Bitcoin ETFs are already, I think, like 55% as much as gold, right? So They're on a pace to pass gold like by July. This is crazy. I thought it would take 3, 4, 5 years. So everything, it's interesting. The fee war that happened in the 2 days before they launched, I always said that was like 2 years of fee war in 2 days. I feel like this has been like a year or two of flows and volume smashed into like 2 months. And it's interesting because I do find that time is different in crypto. And I almost feel like ETFs are getting sucked into the crypto time thing, like that planet on Interstellar where like 1 minute is like 2 years on Earth or whatever. I honestly feel like, what is happening here is almost more consistent with the way crypto moves than the way a typical ETF moves. So I think it's interesting. And that's another reason it's fascinating, is because these are two worlds colliding. It's TradFi and crypto, and they're each having an effect on each other. And I think one of the effects is everything's moving faster. And I think that one of the things that you see is the big platforms, we're going to take like 6 months to add them. But the fact that there's even rumors that they're going to add the ETFs on within 2 months, that's a good sign, because it tells you that the gatekeepers are getting incoming phone calls from their advisors, and they don't want to look like idiots. You can't have an advisor in Kentucky who has a client saying, "Hey, can I buy IBIT?" No, you know, it's like almost like, you know, and they're like, "Why?" Well, daddy at the home office says I can't use it. It's just, you look totally emasculated. It's just not good client service. So the fact that they are going to maybe add them sooner is a good sign. So it looks like the demand was pretty grassroots. And we know that from the number of trades. The only thing that I'm a little surprised at is I think there's more retail action than I thought. I thought it would take longer because the advisors are less of them, but they come in bigger. But we've seen a ton of retail interest here. But I don't think this is GameStop ape retail. This is probably a more sober, normal retail. The kind of people who probably would buy an ARK or a thematic ETF. They're probably not first-time ETF users. So to me, this is a different kind of retail than the crypto people may assume retail is. They may just assume it's like the GameStop people. I don't think this is that crowd. I think this is a more heads-up retail. And I think these are people who might have been interested in Bitcoin, but just didn't want to go through the hassle of like getting it in all these other ways they could. And the ETF is such a known, trusted, easy thing for them. Just click buy. You got the trade on and you don't have to worry about it. So I think that the value proposition has really sort of carried the day for a lot of the flows.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, earlier when you were talking about how the time here is more like crypto time, I just felt like, welcome to my world.
Do you ever take breaks and go into like regular Earth world and like not do anything crypto? Do you notice a difference?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes I'll just be like hanging out with friends or whatever for like a good several hours. And yeah, you're right. Like things feel different when you're not just in cryptomania, but I kind of really thrive on the pace and I love it. I did want to ask some more detailed, I guess, questions about this particular week, because obviously Bitcoin fleetingly hit its previous all-time high around 69K. And you had a number of tweets. One of them was you said that on that day, which was Tuesday, you said, wow, iBit took in a record smashing 788 million, leading team effort for the newborn nine, as you've been calling them, with nearly $1 billion in gross flows, despite the reverse God candle, which is how the price kind of corrupted after.
Is that the right phrase for that? Or is there another way to put that?
Oh God, I don't know. Cause I'm not a trader. So you probably know better than I do.
Everybody keeps on with the God candle. This was like the God candle, but it was red.
I understood what it meant.
Devil candle? Anyway, well, regardless, sorry, I didn't mean to sidetrack you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was that. And then you kind of also noted just records in both BITO, the Bitcoin futures, BITI, yep. I guess, the short Bitcoin ETF, and then BITX, the leveraged Bitcoin ETF. So I'm just curious for kind of what you're seeing when you're looking at the volumes and the trading, and especially around that period where, you know, near the recent or the last all-time high.
Yeah. So it's interesting, the spillover effect to the futures ETFs. I kind of thought that those would start to go down in interest because you can get the real deal with spot. Why bother? I think what's going on here is that there's just, when you have something that's going up, like what was it, up 30% in 2 weeks, you know, it was up like 6% a day. This stuff attracts all kinds of traders. This is just a fascinating, you know, it's like bait. So you're going to get a lot of traders and a lot of arb going on between the futures, the Bitcoin futures, the spot. So I think some of the volume in the futures ETFs is people arbing between everything or using it to hedge. So it's not necessarily like somebody woke up and said, I want to go long Bitcoin, I'm going to buy BITO. So I think a lot of the volume in the spot Bitcoin ETFs is just trading between them and maybe even trading between exchanges. And basically, if anything is out of whack, someone's going to arb that now. So there's a lot of arb volume, but that's okay. That keeps all the prices in line. So no matter where you are, futures ETFs and exchange, you're probably going to get a good price for what Bitcoin is trading at because someone would have arbed any gaps. So this is the power of arb and the ETF market makers. And I think that's a good portion of the volume. So when you have something that's in play like this, because 30% in 2 weeks, I think the Qs is flat and the S&P is flat. So stocks have been, you know, they've been great, but not like this, right? So when you have something, you're going to attract all kinds of people getting into it. So the volume numbers, I think, show that. I don't think they'll sustain this kind of volume. I think over time, maybe one of them will. Like iBit could end up trading like $1.5 billion a day forever. Fidelity probably comes down a little. Everybody else comes down a little when things settle down. But notice on the day that it went from 69 and then down to like 59 or whatever in one day, the volume was highest ever. When things are volatile, whether it's up or down, especially down, ETF volume goes up. So volatility actually creates more volume because traders get in there. People just really, like I said, this is something really attractive to the trading crowd. Now, the fact that it went up to 69K, I think is interesting. It went down quickly. As somebody who just watches prices, you know, it's weird how that happened personally, because ETFs bought $1 billion that day. And I guess somebody said, some guy from like 13 years ago, like just decided to dump all his Bitcoin savings on one day, which I get. Like if you hold a bunch of Bitcoin and you bought it a long time ago, I get the idea of like, you probably, maybe you're married or something and your wife's like, dude, you're sitting on like $7 million. Just, we have to buy a house. Like at some point I could see people cashing out at these highs. So I could see like this stunted, like two steps forward, one step back, even if the ETFs are just consistent buyers. So that was an interesting thing for me to see. And the idea that it was this one person, this whale from way back when, it's just an interesting phenomenon, but it probably did need to take a breather. I mean, it was going up too quickly. Even in stocks, you see this. Usually it goes down for a quick day and then it regains its momentum. But the ETFs seem to be consistent buyers for the time being.
All right. And just two quick yes-no questions before we go to the ad break. Amongst these newborn nine, as you call them, do you think it's safe to say that BlackRock will be the winner?
Yeah. I mean, Okay. Yeah. I mean, BlackRock will be the one. It's going to trade the most for sure. But the rest of them, like five of them are already in the what I would call upper middle class. And then I just saw Valkyrie took in 40 million yesterday. That is a lot. Like, so nobody, everybody's a winner here. But the one, the GLD of Bitcoin is going to be IBIT.
And the second yes, no question is, do you foresee any of those smaller issuers or the issuers with smaller AUMs bowing out?
No, because even I don't have the numbers in front of me, but even, I think WisdomTree is probably around 30, 40 million. I mean, you only need about 50 million here to be profitable. And WisdomTree is committed to this space. They got a bunch of ETFs in Europe. And then you start going up, everybody's got over 100 million. So they're already in profit zone. Even if they had 10 million, it's only been 2 months. Normally you'd be ETFs a year. So even if you extrapolate WisdomTree, they're going to be well over 100 million in a year. So I don't see any of these nine closing. What I do see happening is a bunch of spaghetti getting thrown at the wall, like 18 different forms of leveraged Bitcoin ETFs. And maybe three are successful, three are middle class, and like six get closed. So I do think there'll be spaghetti thrown at the wall outside of the nine. Some of those will come and go. The nine are here to stay. None of them are going to close.
All right. So in a moment, we're going to talk about other types of spaghetti being thrown at the wall. But first, a quick word from the sponsors who make this show possible. Polkadot is the original and largest layer zero blockchain with over 2,000 plus developers. The anticipated Polkadot 2.0 upgrade will be a massive accelerator for the ecosystem, upgrading the infrastructure with 8 times higher transaction throughput and twice as fast block times, tailored core time for the needs of every protocol, trustless bridges to multiple chains, and revised tokenomics with a token burn to reduce inflation. Perfect for GameFi and DeFi to build, grow, and scale. Get your Web3 ideas to market fast. Think big, build bigger with Polkadot. Join the community at polkadot.network/ecosystem/community. The Uniswap protocol is the largest decentralized exchange with billions of dollars in weekly volume across thousands of tokens within the Ethereum ecosystem. But Uniswap is more than just a protocol. Uniswap Labs builds tools to help users swap smarter with easier, safer, self-custody products that provide users access to DeFi. Tap into Uniswap's market-leading liquidity from their world-famous web app, mobile wallet, and, coming soon, the Uniswap browser extension. No more clunky experiences. Just clean, simple, and smart. Visit smarter.uniswap.org to get started. Back to my conversation with Eric. So speaking of spaghetti being thrown at the wall, when do you think options might be approved?
Yeah, so I'm fishing around for information on that, but I don't have any good sort of sourced material for you right now. What I do know is that when we look at the options, that September is the final deadline. Now, they typically wouldn't wait till the final deadline in something like this, but because it's Bitcoin, you never know. you also need OCC and CFTC approval, but they did approve gold ETF options, but they didn't approve platinum and palladium, but I don't know if I would even get worried about it. My gut and all the information I have says they'll be approved sometime between now and September. You would hope sooner, but you know, September would be like the final deadline.
And what about in-kind redemptions? Do you think those will ever be allowed?
Not anytime soon. I think, you know, I just think for the time being, first of all, the cash is doing fine. It hasn't been that big of a deal. You know, you notice the premiums are really low. Would they be a little tighter with in-kind? Probably a couple basis points, but they're good. So it's not like in-kind, it's not like there's this massive need for it, but I do think down the road they'll do it. I don't think it would be something that happens within a year though. I think we have an election coming up. We see what happens. If Gensler remains SEC chairman, let's assume that. It could be 2 years before that happens. But if a new SEC chairman comes in and they could be one way or the other on the pendulum, and that could change everything. So for now, though, I wouldn't look for in-kind for over a year or two.
And then obviously we've been seeing these steady outflows from GBTC. So do you think those outflows will ever reverse? And then assuming not, do you think that would ever cause GBTC to cut their fee in order to stem that tide?
Yeah, it's interesting. If you are a shopper, it's hard to, I like the folks at Grayscale. They're all very nice. And they're why we're here. Let's salute them for, they took it to the SEC and won. But if you have a choice of these products, let's say you were shopping for, a new toaster. And one of them was $150 and the rest were $20. And they all kind of did the same thing. I mean, no normal shopper would pick the $150. And at this point, the other ones are liquid enough. Like one of the cases you can make, GBTC was more liquid. Well, the other ones are getting plenty liquid. So you're losing a lot of any advantages. So I don't see a lot of new flows coming in. But what is going on is what I call the bull market subsidy. And this is kind of ingenious by Grayscale to foresee this. And I didn't really even think about it, but it's something we see in active mutual funds. If you have $25 billion, which they had, and you see $10 billion in outflows, you'd think, okay, well, it would have $15 billion in assets. But if the Bitcoin price goes up 40%, you actually have the same amount of assets or more. And so if it goes up 100%, so if Grayscale, which I'm sure they're all bullish on Bitcoin, they can afford to lose a ton of customers and assets, and they could still be making a mint through just the fact that Bitcoin went up that much. It's a little miragey. The assets are more about just the price of Bitcoin at that point than having actual customers. You'd rather have the customers. But hey, it's still the same revenue. It's the same dollar revenue. So in a way, Grayscale is probably going to be fine and benefit just from starting the race with a big base. And so active mutual funds, when Vanguard came around, they all had hundreds of billions, tens of billions. So when Vanguard started to like take the customers away, the stock market went up 2-3-fold. So active mutual funds, like stock picking mutual funds, had 3 trillion 10 years ago. They've seen 2.5 trillion of outflows, yet they have 5-6 trillion today. And that it's probably the only business where you can lose customers and make more money. The key to that though, is to come in with a big base, and Grayscale had a big base. So yeah. I wouldn't worry about them. But I don't see anybody who's fresh shopping for a Bitcoin ETF would pick GBTC.
Yeah, of course. So now let's talk about Ether ETFs. You tweeted, quote, "To be honest, and no offense to the ETH people, but this is such small potatoes versus spot Bitcoin ETFs. It's like the opening act coming on after the headliner, using Gen X bands." I'm Gen X too. "It's like Sister Hazel trying to follow Nirvana." So, by the way, the ETH people definitely took offense to this. I can tell from following Twitter. So can you elaborate on what you meant by that?
Yeah, it's no offense to ETH. I think it's a great concept. And obviously, it's almost like Robin to Bitcoin's Batman. They seem to be like the two main ones, right? And then you go have this big leg down to the other ones. But the issue is, for normal people, this is me just talking as an ETF person. I'm not judging Bitcoin versus Ether. I don't really actually know enough to really distinguish, but I can't make those judgments, and I wouldn't. But I can tell you about the marketplace. And what I've seen is the ETH futures ETFs have 40 million, 50 million. And the Bitcoin futures ETFs have, 50-fold that, or 40-fold that. So it's more about, and when you think anecdotally and you think about an advisor or a regular retail person, Bitcoin gets 90% of the press attention. Bitcoin was like the first, it's just bigger, badder. It's like more in your face. And it's been more of the digital gold brand, right? And people who are investing in this probably just need one thing. Like, they're just looking for a little speculative hot sauce. They aren't going all in for the mission of Ether or the mission of Bitcoin. So they're satisfied with their Bitcoin. So I just see Ether getting less than 10% market share of the crypto ETF marketplace. That doesn't mean I'm judging it. It's just my call on how big I see it getting. Silver is very similar. Palladium and platinum. So we've seen this in gold. So I'm just going on historical precedent and patterns. And I'm telling you, when I do this, it tends to work. ETF patterns really pay off when you extrapolate them. And just let's just use common sense, like in logic. And somebody brought this up. I think an advisor could explain Bitcoin a little easier and better than explaining Ether to a client. That's another biggie. So all these things to me speak to a very narrow area. And again, it's not my judging of that cryptocurrency. I make calls, right? So this is how we see it based on what we've seen in the marketplace. But yeah, they got kind of upset, but it wasn't anything personal. And I could be proven wrong, but what we will see is we'll see Bitcoin plus Ether ETFs. So we call it like the crypto fund. But in that fund, ETH probably gets a small weighting because they're probably going to cap weight it. And so ETH could get a little bit of money from that. But if you put the money in that, most of it will go to Bitcoin. So that would continue to make Bitcoin the dominant vehicle and the dominant crypto asset in among crypto ETFs. I don't see that changing.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense to me.
I'm just curious, do you see any flaws in that? Like, is there something I'm missing there?
The way I would explain it is just a little bit different. The market cap of Bitcoin right now is 1.3 billion. And for Ether, it's 463. So I guess then if you add them together, it would be like 1.78-ish. So then what is that? Like 25, 30%, I guess, if we were to do a market cap allocation. I would just explain it more like that the value proposition for Ether is a little bit harder for everyday people to understand and also for financial advisors to understand, because something like Ether hasn't really existed before, whereas something like Bitcoin, people, you know, analogize to gold, which is something people can easily grasp just in a word. Or a phrase, digital gold, whereas like Ether, like that's something that's really quite new and different. And to really understand, the potential in there or like why it's valuable would take somebody a lot longer than just hearing a two-word phrase. But I did want to ask you about the potential for them to be approved, because I am seeing conflicting things about this. For instance, Jake Chervinsky of Variant Fund tweeted, doubtfully saying, quote, "The SEC got a ton of political blowback for approving BTC ETFs. If the SEC asks BlackRock and other ETH ETF sponsors to withdraw, which is a common practice, I bet they will." On the other hand, CFTC Chair Rostin Benham pointed out this week in testimony in front of the House Agricultural Committee that Ether futures ETFs have been trading based on a classification of Ether as a commodity. But then he pointed out this potential inconsistency around Prometheum, which might custody Ether as a security, and how that would sort of upend this other decision that's been around for a few years. So what are your thoughts? Do you think Ether ETFs are likely to be approved or not?
Yeah, so I was a little more optimistic a month ago. The reason James and I just talked about it this morning, actually, before I came on, because I wanted to get on the same page as him. Because he's a little
James Seifert, who's also been on the show. Yes.
My partner in crime in this. We're more like 50%. We were a little higher. We might even go a little lower, because what you do have is the fact that ETH futures exists. So if you have an analogy, Bitcoin futures existed and they didn't approve spot, so they got sued. So spot exists. ETH futures exists. You can just say, well, the SEC should just like approve them and not even waste the time of getting sued. Easy. And the fact that ETH futures exist kind of kills the whole security argument, because you already approved futures. So that's where we were 75%. But the reason we're ratcheting that down a little, people like Jake are very smart. So we do take stuff like that into account. But we have not heard a peep from the SEC to issuers. There's been no engagement whatsoever. And we're well past when they engaged on Bitcoin. Now, there's obviously a template set up now because of all the work they did on the Bitcoin prospectuses, but you'd think they would reach out at some point because ETH does have its some specifics that you have to work on. So until we see engagement, we're going to remain pretty mild on our odds. And the other thing is the lawsuit. There is no lawsuit. Now you could say, well, they could deny them and then get sued. Okay. But does Grayscale, after getting all the Bitcoin ETFs out and seeing that all they did was help, well, I mean, they benefited for sure, but BlackRock, like, they're going to start at the same time. And so they're going to spend all this money to sue the SEC just to start on the same time and see like BlackRock probably clean up. I think they might not be as motivated to spend that money now. And would anybody else sue the SEC? Probably not. It's weird to sue the SEC. And like I said, how much money is actually available for Ether ETFs? Not that much, in my opinion. Just look at the futures. And, you know, they would give you some guide to the interest in that market. So for all these reasons, those variables are not here now. But we are still, you know, maybe around 50 because of the fact that ETH futures exist. And you'd think the SEC would just want to get this off their plate. And then they can just officially move on with other things. Because if they deny this, this will sort of become a thing. It'll have them tangling with the industry again. I personally would just approve it and move on with my life. But there's also this idea that you said political. They got a lot of blowback for approving the spot. And if they approve ETH spot, or if they deny ETH spot, it could be almost like throwing a bone to some of the people who were pissed off just to say, like, we're not, you know, just to prove that we are not into this stuff. The other thing that somebody brought up, which is Scott Johnson, who was somebody who worked with us heavily on the Bitcoin spot approval process. He's an ex-lawyer, is the correlation between Ether and Ether futures is not as great as Bitcoin and Bitcoin futures. And that is possibly what they're going to use in a rejection. That is a little thing they could drive through, because what else could they possibly use? But that does give them a little daylight, something to use in a rejection that is different than the spot. And so
that's, do you have a number on that? Like, what, you know, if it's not 99%, what is it?
I'll get it to you. I don't know. It's a little lower. I don't think it's crazy low, but it's lower than that. And I think, I don't even want to guess because I don't want someone to like come back.
I mean, like almost everything is lower than 99. So
yeah. But my point to him was, it's high enough. Let's just face it. They're correlated. But he's like, yeah, but it could be used. Like, in other words, it's a difference. Like, in other words, if the SEC is searching for a reason to reject and they can't use security because the futures were approved, this could give them that opportunity. So when you post this, I'll reply with the numbers just so I can not say anything wrong here.
Okay. Yeah, I would be curious. Just when they were soliciting comments on the potential for the Ether ETFs, you know, one of the kind of prompts they gave was, they said, are there particular features related to Ether and its ecosystem, including its proof of stake consensus mechanism and concentration of control or influence by a few individuals or entities, that raise unique concerns about Ether's susceptibility to fraud and manipulation? So
that's a little daylight.
I feel like too. Hints as to maybe their thinking.
Yeah. But the problem with that is when they lean on fraud and manipulation, then they are totally vulnerable to the lawsuit again because they approved ETH futures. But then it comes down to, well, but ETH futures aren't correlated. So that's where that could tie into what you're saying. You see what I'm saying? So fraud and manipulation is only going to work for them again if they can prove that it's not as correlated, in my opinion. But I could be wrong. Like I said, I haven't dove as hardcore into this legally as I have into the spot. Because again, James and I are not lawyers, but we definitely talk to them and engage with them, but I haven't gone as far deep into it. I also just, again, am just not as interested. The spot Bitcoin ETFs in the marketplace to me are such a massive story. And who's using them? You know, the Arizona pension deciding to like add them in, the guy from Stanford getting the student endowment to put 7% in, all of these little things and the flows and the, to me, this is plenty. At the end of the day, this is where almost the bulk of the money is going to go. That's where you get the Sister Hazel. You're asking me to stay after, you're asking me, it's like I've Nirvana and Sister Hazel playing at the same time. I'm sorry. I'm just going to watch Nirvana for a while. Like, I'm just not, I just mentally can't get interested. I know that insults some people, but I'm not interested in it. But there's also people filing ETFs for like weight loss themes or ultra short bond ETFs. I haven't also given those a ton of attention either. In other words, Ether just falls into other stuff that just isn't as interesting as what's going on with the Bitcoin ETFs in real time right now. Because all they're doing is shattering every single precedent we've seen.
Yeah. I mean, I understand the ETH people in the sense that if you understand the technology, then Ether definitely does represent kind of a leapfrog in terms of, you know, like people have always said, Bitcoin's scripting language is very limited in terms of what you can do with it. We are now seeing a flourishing of innovation on Bitcoin, which is basically people figuring out ways to get around that to make it more like Ethereum. But, you know, for years now, a lot of the innovation in crypto has happened first on Ethereum. It's just that, you know, as I said earlier, I think it's much harder for the layperson to understand.
If you buy Bitcoin, I think a lot of people don't think you get anything extra with Ether in terms of price. I think most people find them to be correlated. Sort of like if I bought SPY, do I really need to buy, I don't know, another large cap index? Like, you know, another like the Russell. I already own the S&P. I don't need to also buy the Russell because I have the same thing. So I think most people find that if they buy Bitcoin, they're sort of getting Ether in a way, the price action typically moves somewhat in tandem. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, you're right. If you're in a zoomed out everyday person who is
That's
accessing this
via
wealth advisor. Yes. From that perspective, that is true. And so we're over time, but I just have to ask you, do you think if Ether ETFs get approved that any of them will offer yield from staking or like, even if it's like not upon launch, but in the years after launch?
So I don't know, because, you know, from what I know, staking reminds me of securities lending, and you can't do that in a 33 Act, which means the holdings need to be with the custodian, 100% of them. So I just think that's going to carry the day. It would be a break from that. If they did, that would be interesting. But I just think as a 33 Act, I'm just going to go on gold and Bitcoin not being able to lend out any shares. That just feels like similar to me. So I think they probably will not allow it, but I could be wrong. Again, I'm mildly expert on that.
Okay. Well, last two quick questions. You know, just curious, this is sort of a short-term projection for Bitcoin. Now that we have these portfolio managers that could influence the Bitcoin price, do you think that we will see some kind of like quarterly rebalancing effect where for any quarter where Bitcoin makes gains, that suddenly there's like a little dump at the beginning of every quarter?
It could be. Some PMs actually don't rebalance. They like to ride those winners. Like a Cathie Wood, she always rebalances. So she would sell ARKB. She wants to keep ARKB at like 10%, let's say. So if it has a run up and says 14%, she got to sell some. So someone like her would sell. Retail, I think they got to let that run. I think they, you know, people get greedy. Greed, I think, is going to counteract that. I think you'll some rebalancing, but some people are going to be like, no way am I selling this. I wouldn't look for too much of that. What I would look for is what I said earlier, which is these old heads who have like sitting on a bunch of Bitcoin and who might be getting more obligations in life. Like they have a mortgage, they have this. They kind of need to maybe turn that into dollars sometimes to pay for stuff. That seems, what I saw on, was it 2 days ago? That was interesting to me. And because there was other times where ETFs brought in money and the price went down still. So I think I'm interested in finding out who these other players are and why they're selling. And it kind of is logical to me that some of these people who are sitting on a ton would actually use some of these price movements up to cash out a little because, you know, life gets complicated as you get older and you need money and some, you can't pay for with Bitcoin with a lot of stuff right now. So, you know,
okay,
I can see more of that.
Totally makes sense. And then last, which is slightly longer term, is now that you have seen these first 2 months of inflows, do you have a projection for how much money you think will come into Bitcoin by the end of the year and where the price might be at that time?
Oh man. So we said there'd be 10 to 15 billions in net flows after the first year. We are not even 2 months and they're at 9 billion. So they're already a billion away from my like low point and only 5 billion away from my high point. They're probably going to blow away my number. A lot can happen though, because if they took in like 40 billion, and let's just say there's some crazy correction in like August and 20 billion comes out, I think there'll be stronger holders than people think. But in other words, there could be an outflow period somewhere in August, September, and actually could be right at 15 after the dust settles between everything. But it does look like for now, I'm going to lose or I'm going to have underestimated. So if you ask me right now, what would I say if I could revise it? I'd probably just double it. I'd probably go to 30 from 15 as my high point. I don't think 500 million to a billion a day pace is going to be maintained. I think at some point that slows down a little bit, but you know, who knows? Like I said, it depends on how much word of mouth happens, because if you talk to people, a lot of people just don't even know any of this is going on, or they just, after SBF, they have just mentally checked out from Bitcoin. They're like, I don't care. I'm not going to be FOMO'd this time, but at some point they might be FOMO'd, right? If it gets 100K or something. So I don't know. Does everybody have a FOMO point? And I don't know, but the higher the price goes, the more people's FOMO points they'll break. And advisors in particular, if I'm an advisor and I'm managing money, there's two roads you can go. You can go, look, I'm your consultant and this is a bad idea. I'm not doing it. Almost like a doctor would say, I cannot prescribe you some crazy drug or something. Or you're like, okay, look, let's put a little in there just so, you know, none of us have to regret it if it goes to like $1 million, but let's just know it'll go down. I would do that one just because it's a small amount of money. I wouldn't want to hear it later. And, you know, part of investing is speculating for some people. So I see no problem with it. So I think the question is how long does that, does people's hearts and minds have to shift a little from the normal world? And price is going to have a big impact on that shift. And also, but you see people like Matt Hogan, and you know, there's a Matt Hogan at every one of these issuers, right? And many of them, but Matt and Hunter, I think, have done a good job sort of giving you insight into what they're doing all day. Hey, I'm in Colorado today. I saw three advisors. Hear what they told me. And like, you know, multiply Matt by like 100, you've got all these wholesalers. That's going to matter too, because these people have good relationships. They're trusted people with these advisors. So I guess I could see, you know, it's possible we get something higher than 30, 40 billion, but I would rather be wrong on the down. Like, I'd rather be wrong on the upside. I'd rather underestimate it than overestimate it. So I'll stick with 30 if I could redo my estimate today.
I still find that conservative if we're only 2 months in and you're only willing to double your high.
I'm plotting out a little bump in the road somewhere where, okay, maybe we get to 30 by like April, May, or let's say June, but August is August is nasty. You know, something like that. And that shakes a few people out, maybe 10% of the money leaves, but then it starts to go back up again. But because August was so nasty, you don't find many people a little shy at that point. So that's something that is very possible. If what you're saying is this nice road up for 12 months straight, you will be right.
Well, no, I will be right. I mean, I didn't say a specific number, but yeah, then obviously it would be higher than 30.
I would be wrong, I would say, if it's a more, you know, if the path is sort of more one direction up, my number should be blown away. But if we see a big bump in the road somewhere, I think mine could be more likely to happen.
Okay.
I'm planning that because, you know, I've seen Bitcoin. There's definitely stuff goes down, you know, stuff happens. People get freaked out. It's volatile. As Gary Gensler said yesterday, it's a roller coaster. But overall, again, let's just leave it with, it is crazy how fast they've grown and how fast the volume has grown. Not only shattered records, but really blew away my expectations. And I was probably one of the more bullish people.
Yeah. Well, this is basically how Bitcoin usually operates. So I would say it was predictable. But anyway, Eric, this has been so fun. I'm so glad we got to dissect this really wild and fun week in Bitcoin. Thank you so much for coming on Unchained.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Don't forget, next up is the weekly news recap, today presented by Unchained contributor Megan Christensen. Stick around for This Week in Crypto after this short break. Did you know you can buy and sell crypto with tax benefits in an individual retirement account? iTrust Capital makes this possible. But what does this mean? When you buy crypto outside an IRA, like on an exchange, you face taxes on gains. But in an IRA, like a Roth IRA, gains can be tax-free. iTrust Capital also has some of the lowest fees in the industry and 24/7 accessibility. Start now and maximize your retirement savings with iTrust Capital.
Welcome to this week's Crypto Roundup. Today, we navigate through Shapeshift's SEC settlement, Binance.us's compliance struggles, Doquan's extradition developments, DCG's legal counter, crypto's political clout, MicroStrategy's Bitcoin bet, Wormhole's airdrop debate, Coinbase's technical glitch, Tether's milestone market cap, and the surge in Uniswap's UNI token. Thanks for tuning in. This episode was written by Juan Aronovich and edited by Jeannie Kim. I'm Megan Christensen with Unchained. Let's get into it. Shapeshift, a firm founded by Eric Voorhees, has agreed to pay a $275,000 fine to the SEC to resolve allegations that it operated as an unregistered securities dealer. The SEC's cease and desist order highlights that Shapeshift offered crypto assets that were deemed investment contracts and thus classified as securities, referencing the criteria established by the 1946 Howey test. This settlement includes a commitment from Shapeshift to refrain from future violations of securities regulations. The controversy stems from Shapeshift's operations between July 2017 and November 2019, before it ceased its direct crypto asset exchange services in 2021. SEC commissioners Hester Pierce and Mark Ueda criticized the vague nature of the Shapeshift settlement, highlighting regulatory uncertainty in the crypto sector. Quote, "In sum, Shapeshift is in trouble because the commission, nearly 10 years after Shapeshift's platform started trading and more than 3 years after it changed its business model, now contends that some unidentified number of the 79 crypto assets it traded between 2014 and 2021 were investment contracts without explaining why," end quote, the two commissioners said. Speaking of settlements, BlockFi is on the verge of resolving its disputes with FTX and Alameda Research through a, quote, "in principle," end quote, settlement valued at $874.5 million. The agreement, pending judicial approval, would allow BlockFi to recover claims against the two entities, facilitating a second interim distribution to its creditors. FTX, in return, will retract its claims against BlockFi, marking a significant step towards concluding the bankruptcy proceedings of these crypto giants. The SEC has raised concerns over Binance.us's compliance with the consent order, focusing on whether the U.S. customer funds are properly safeguarded from access by global employees. Despite Binance.us asserting its adherence to regulations, the SEC questioned the sufficiency of their evidence regarding control over customer assets. This dispute unfolds as Binance.us reports severe operational setbacks, including a 75% revenue drop and over two-thirds of staff layoffs following the SEC's lawsuit. This action has led to asset withdrawals and challenges in maintaining banking relationships, casting a shadow over the company's future viability amidst ongoing legal scrutiny. Meanwhile, the Nigerian House of Representatives Committee on Financial Crimes summoned Binance CEO Richard Tang to appear before it amid a probe following the detention of two executives. Doquan, the co-founder of Terraform Labs, is set to be extradited to South Korea. This decision by the High Court of Montenegro comes after a nuanced legal battle between the United States and South Korea over Kwan's extradition, ultimately favoring his return to his native country. The Court of Appeals recently overturned a prior ruling for extradition to the U.S., leading to this latest decision. Kwan faces serious charges in both countries, including securities fraud by the U.S. SEC and criminal charges by the Department of Justice, in addition to charges in South Korea related to the fallout of Terra USD and Luna, a $45 billion collapse that led to the crypto winter beginning in 2022. Digital Currency Group and its CEO, Barry Silbert, have filed a motion to dismiss what they call a, quote, "baseless lawsuit," end quote, brought by the New York Attorney General, Letitia James. The lawsuit, initiated in October 23 and expanded last month, accuses DCG and its subsidiary, Genesis Global Capital, of defrauding investors of $3 billion, particularly in connection with the collapse of crypto firm Three Arrows Capital and crypto exchange FTX. The investors were tied to Gemini Earn, a partnership between Genesis and the crypto exchange Gemini, as well as those invested directly with Genesis. In its motion, DCG vehemently denied the fraud accusations, describing them as a, quote, a thin web of baseless innuendo, blatant mischaracterizations, and unsupported, conclusory statements. Crypto Political Action Committees, PACs, like Fairshake, have demonstrated some clout in recent congressional primaries, particularly targeting and contributing to their defeat of U.S. Representative Katie Porter in California. Their strategic spending, exceeding $13 million across several key races, underscores the crypto industry's intent to shape political landscapes to favor the regulation of digital assets. Josh Velasto, a spokesperson for these PACs, declared, quote, the crypto voter is here, end quote, emphasizing the industry's intent to be a significant political player in the 2024 elections. Simultaneously, the market is buzzing with the rise of meme coins based on political figures, notably a token named Joe Biden, inspired by and misspelling the name of U.S. President Joe Biden, which surged by 830% in trading volume on Wednesday. Political meme coins reflect the speculative and volatile nature of the crypto market and showcase the often whimsical side of crypto investments. In the week that Bitcoin hit all-time highs, MicroStrategy has increased its convertible debt offering to $700 million, aiming to acquire more Bitcoin. This move, announced by the company that was founded by staunch Bitcoin advocate Michael Saylor, indicates a strong belief in the future value of Bitcoin, despite recent market fluctuations. The conversion price of these notes is set at a 42.5% premium to the stock's last close, reflecting confidence in the asset's value growth. MicroStrategy already has a stockpile of around 193,000 Bitcoin. This week, the market also absorbed the move of $69 million worth of Bitcoin mined in 2010 to Coinbase, likely for sale. This action by one of the earliest Bitcoin miners coincided with Bitcoin reaching a new all-time high. Analysts suggest that this large-scale sell-off, indicative of long-term holders cashing out, contributed to an 8.5% market dip and triggered over $1 billion in leveraged position liquidations on platforms like Binance. Wormhole, a token bridging platform, is set to airdrop 617 million W tokens to 397,704 wallets, stirring debates over allocation fairness by its community. The distribution, aimed at rewarding users of Wormhole ecosystem applications and its Discord and NFT communities, has left some users dissatisfied, claiming discrepancies in the allocation process. While the platform has launched an eligibility tracker, issues with the Ethereum virtual machine wallet connections have been reported. Despite these challenges, some users have expressed frustration over perceived inequities, with concerns over the criteria used to determine allocations, leading to calls for greater transparency and fairness in future distributions. As Bitcoin reached a new high, some Coinbase users encountered a concerning issue for the second time in 2 weeks, zero account balances displayed on the platform. This glitch, amid an increase in Bitcoin trading activity, prompted official response from Coinbase, assuring users of the safety of their funds despite the apparent account discrepancies. The company acknowledged the problems, including increased latency and intermittent display errors, while working on improvements. Coinbase CEO Brian Armstrong previously linked similar disruptions to a, quote, large surge of traffic, end quote, reflecting the platform's struggle to handle spikes in user activity during bullish market conditions. Tether, the leading stablecoin globally, has reached a new milestone by surpassing $100 billion market cap for the first time. This growth, including an increase of $10 billion in market value since December, is attributed to rising optimism in the market, particularly the recent surge in Bitcoin prices. Uniswap's governance token, UNI, experienced a notable 20% increase in value as a decentralized finance platform's proposal for a revenue-sharing mechanism for token holders nears approval. The anticipation has elevated UNI's price to its highest in 26 months, outperforming broader market trends and showcasing strong investor confidence in the proposed governance overhaul. The initiative, poised for an on-chain vote, promises substantial annual dividends to UNI holders, potentially setting a precedent for similar mechanisms across other DeFi protocols while navigating regulatory considerations. And that's all. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed this recap, go to unchainedcrypto.substack.com, that is unchainedcrypto.substack.com, and sign up for a free newsletter so that you can stay up to date with the latest in crypto. Unchained is produced by Laura Shin, with help from Nelson Wang, Matt Pilchard, Juan Aronovich, Megan Gavis, Shashank, and Margaret Correa. Thanks for listening.
Unchained is now a part of the CoinDesk Podcast Network. For the latest in digital assets, check out Markets Daily, 5 days a week, with host Noel Atchison. Follow the CoinDesk Podcast Network for some of the best shows in crypto.